rally their armies to face the threat before it grew too large. But Vasa's too brash, too young. She didn't play the game the way the Golden One, Demetra, did. Didn't see the lust in their eyes when I told them of the Cauldron's powers. Didn't know that from the moment I began to spin Highburn's lies, they became her enemies. They couldn't kill Vasa. The next in line to her throne is far more willful. So they found an old Death Lord above the wall, with a penchant for enslaving young women. He cursed her, and stole her away. The entire world believes she's been sick these past months.
"We know," Moore said, and none of us dared glance at Elaine. "We learned about it."
And even with the truth laid bare, none of us told him that Lucien had gone after her. Elaine seemed to remember, though, who was hunting for that missing queen. And she said to Grayson, stone-faced and sorrowful through all of this,
"I did not mean to deceive you."
His father answered, "I find I have trouble believing that." Grayson swallowed. "Did you think you could come back here? Live with me as this lie?"
"No. Yes, I don't know what I wanted."
"And you are bound to some Fey male? A High Lord's son?" "A different High Lord's heir, likely," I wanted to say.
"His name is Lucien."
I wasn't certain if I'd ever heard his name from her lips. "I don't care what his name is." The first sharp words from Grayson. "You are his mate. Do you even know what that means?"
"It means nothing," Elaine said, her voice breaking. "It means nothing. I don't care who decided it or why they did."
"You belong to him."
"I belong to no one, but my heart belongs to you."
Grayson's face hardened. "I don't want it." He would have been better off hitting her. That's how deep the hurt in her eyes went. And seeing her face crumple. I stepped close, pushing her behind me. "Here's what's going to happen. You are going to take in any people who can make it here. We will supply these walls with wards."
"We don't need them," sneered Nolan.
"Shall I demonstrate for you," I said, "how wrong you are? Or shall you take my word for it that I could reduce this wall to rubble with half a thought? And that is to say nothing of my friends. You will find, Lord Nolan, that you want our wards and our help, all in exchange for taking in whatever humans need the safety."
"I don't want riffraff wandering through here."
"So, only the rich and chosen will walk through these gates?" Rhys asked, arching a brow.
"I can't imagine the aristocracy being content to work your land and fish in your lake, or butcher your meat." "We have plenty of workers here to do that."
It was happening again. Another fight with narrow-minded, hateful people. But Jurian said to the lords,
"I fought beside your ancestor, and he would be ashamed if you locked out those who needed it. You would spit on his grave to do so. I hold a position of trust with Highburn. One word from me, and I will make sure his legion takes a visit here. To you." "You'll threaten to bring the very enemy you seek to protect us from?"
Jurian shrugged.
"I can also convince Highburn to steer clear.
He trusts me that much.
You let in those people. I will do my best to keep his armies far away."
He gave Rhys a look, daring him to doubt it.
We were still too stunned to even try to look neutral.
But then Nolan said,
"I don't pretend to have a large army. Only a considerable unit of soldiers. If what you say is true..."
A glance at Grayson.
"We will take them. Whoever can make it."
I wondered if the Elder Lord might be the one who could actually be reasoned with. Especially as Grayson said to Elaine,
"Take that ring off."
Elaine's fingers curved into a fist. No.
Ugly. This was about to get ugly in the worst way. Take it off. It was Nolan's turn to murmur a warning to his son.
Grayson ignored him. Elaine did not move.
Take it off!
The roared words barked over the stones.
That's enough,
Reese said, his voice lethally calm.
The lady keeps the ring if she wants it. Though none of us will be particularly sad to see it go.
Females tend to prefer gold, or silver, to iron. Grayson leveled a seething look at Rassand.
Is this the start of it? You fey males will come to take our women? Are your own not fuckable enough? Watch your tongue, boy,
his father said. Elaine turned white at the coarse language. Grayson only said to her,
I'm not marrying you. Our engagement is over. I will take whatever people occupy your lands, but not you. Never you.
Tears began sliding down Elaine's face, their scent filling the room with salt. Nesta stepped forward, then another step, then another, until she was in front of Grayson faster than anyone could see. Until Nesta smacked him hard enough that his head snapped to the side.
You never deserved her,
Nesta snarled into the stunned silence as Grayson cupped his face and swore, bending over. Nesta only looked back at me. Rage, unfiltered and burning, roiled in her eyes. But her voice was stone cold as she said to me,
I assume we're done here?
I gave her a wordless nod. And proud as any queen, Nesta took Elaine's arm and led her from the guardhouse. More trailed behind, guarding their backs as they entered the veritable field of weapons and snarling hounds waiting outside. The two lords saw themselves out, without so much as a goodbye. Alone, Jurian said,
Tell the Shadow Singer I'm sorry, about the arrow to the chest.
Reese shook his head.
What's the next move, then? I assume you're doing more than warning humans to flee or hide.
Jurian pushed off the table.
The next move, Rhysand, is me going back to that Highburn war camp and throwing a fit that my search for Miriam and Draken's whereabouts wasn't fruitful. My step after that is to take another trip to the continent and sow the seeds of discord amongst the Queen's courts. To let some vital things slip about their agenda, who they really support, what they really want. It will keep them busy. Too worried about their own internal conflict to consider sailing here. And once that's done, who knows? Perhaps I'll join you on the battlefield.
Reese rubbed his brows with a thumb and forefinger, the locks of his hair sliding forward as he dipped his head.
I wouldn't believe a word, except I looked into that head of yours.
Jurian tapped a hand on the doorframe.
Tell Cassian to hammer the left flank hard tomorrow. Highburn is putting his untrained nobles there for some seasoning. They're spoiled and untested. Buckle the ranks there and it'll spook the grunts. Hit them with everything you've got, and fast. Don't give them time to rally or find their courage.
Jurian gave me a grim smile.
I never congratulated you for slaughtering Dagdin and Branna. Good riddance.
I did it for those children of the Blessed, I said. Not for glory.
I know,
Jurian said, flicking up his brows.
Why do you think I decided to trust you?
Chapter 55
I'm too old for these sort of surprises.
Moore groused as the war tent groaned in the howling mountain wind at the northern border of the Winter Court, the Illyrian army settling down for the night. To wait for the attack tomorrow, They'd flown all day. The location remote enough to keep even an army of our size hidden. Until tomorrow, at least. We'd warned Tarquin and dispatched messages to Helion and Calias to join if they could make it in time. But come the hour before dawn, the Illyrian Legion would take to the skies and fly hard for that southern battlefield. They would land, hopefully, before it began, right as Kier and his commanders winnowed in the Darkbringer Legion from the Night Court. And then, the slaughter would begin. On either side. If what Jurian claimed was true. Cassian had choked when we told him Jurian's battle advice. A milder reaction, Asriel said, than his initial response. I asked more from where I sat at the foot of the fur-covered chaise we currently shared. You never suspected Jurian might be... good. She swigged from her wine and leaned back against the cushions piled before the rolled headdress. My sisters were in another tent, not quite as big but equally luxurious, their lodgings flanked by Cassian's and Asriel's tents, and Moore's before it. No one would get them out without my friends knowing, even if Moore was currently here with me. I don't know, she said, hauling a heavy wool throw blanket over her legs. I was never as close to Jurian as I was to some of the others, but we did fight together, saved each other. I just assumed Amarantha broke him. Parts of him are broken, I said, shuddering to recall those memories I'd seen, the feelings. I pulled some of her blanket over my lap. We're all broken, Moore said. In our own ways, in places no one might see. I angled my head to inquire, but she asked, Is Elaine all right? No, was all I said. Elaine was not all right. She had quietly cried while we winnowed here, and in the hours afterward, while the army arrived and the camp was rebuilt. She didn't take off her ring. She only lay on the cot in her tent, nestled among the furs and blankets, and stared at nothing. Any bit of good, any advancement, gone. I debated returning to smash every bone in Grayson's body, but resisted, if only because it would give Nesta license to unleash herself upon him. And death at Nesta's hands? I wondered if they'd have to invent a new word for killing when she was done with Grayson. So Elaine silently cried, the tears so unending that I wondered if it was some sign of her heart bleeding out. Some sliver of hope that had shattered today. That Grayson would still love her, still marry her, and that love would trump even a mating bond. A final tether had been snapped to her life in the human lands. Only our father, wherever he was, remained as any sort of connection. Moore read whatever was on my face, and set down the wine on the small wood table beside the chaise. We should sleep. I don't even know why I'm drinking. Today was unexpected. It's so much harder, she said, groaning as she chucked the rest of the blanket into my lap and rose to her feet. When enemies turn into friends. And the opposite, I suppose. What didn't I see? What did I overlook or dismiss? It always makes me reassess myself more than them. Another joy of war? She snorted, heading for the tent flaps. No. Of life. I barely slept that night. Rhys didn't come to the tent. Not once. I slipped from our bed when the darkness was just starting to yield to gray, following the tug of the mating bond as I had done that day under the mountain. He stood atop a rocky outcropping, crusted with patches of ice, watching the stars fade away one by one over the still slumbering camp. I wordlessly slid my arm around his waist, and he shifted his wings to fold me into his side. A lot of soldiers are going to die today, he said quietly. I know.
It never gets easier, he whispered. The strong pains of his face were taut, and silver-lined his eyes as he studied the stars. Only here, only now would he show that grief, that worry and pain. Never before his armies, never before his enemies. He loosed a long breath. Are you ready?
I would stay near the back of the lines with Moore to get a feel for battle, the flow and terror and structure. My sisters would remain here until it was safe to winnow them afterward, if things didn't go to hell first.
No, I admitted, but I have no other choice than to be ready.
Rhys kissed the top of my head, and we stared at the dying stars in silence.
I'm grateful, he said after a while, as the camp beneath us stirred in the building light. To have you at my side? I don't know if I ever told you that. How grateful I am to have you stand with me.
I blinked back the burning in my eyes and took his hand. I laid it over my heart, letting him feel its beating while I kissed him one final time, the last of the stars vanishing as the army below us awoke to do battle. Chapter 56. Jurian was right. We'd seen inside his head, yet we'd still doubted, still wondered if we'd arrived to find Highburn had changed their position or attacked elsewhere. But Highburn's horde was precisely where Jurian claimed they'd be. And as the Illyrian army swept for them while they marched over the spring border and into summer, Highburn's forces certainly seemed shocked. Rhys had cloaked our forces, all of them. Sweat had slid down his temple at the strain, at keeping the mass of us hidden from sight and sound and scent as we flew mile after mile. My wings weren't strong enough, so Moore winnowed us through the sky, keeping pace with them. But we arrived together, and as Rhys ripped the sight shield away, revealing battle-hungry Illyrians spearing from the skies in neat, precise lines, as he revealed the legion of Kyr's Darkbringers charging on foot, swathed in wisps of night and armed with star-bright steel, it was hard not to be smug at the panic that rippled over that marching mass of Highburn. But Highburn's army, it stretched far, deep and long, meant to sweep away everything in its path.
Shields, Cassian bellowed at the front line.
One by one by one, shields of red and blue and green flickered into life around the Illyrians and their weapons, overlapping like the scales of a fish, overlapping like the solid metal shields they each bore on their left arms, locking into place from ankle to shoulder. Below, Kyr's troops rippled with shadowy shields flaring into place before them. Moore winnowed us to the tree-covered hill that overlooked the field Cassian had deemed would be the best place to hit them based on Azrael's scouting. There was a slope to the grass, and our advantage. We held the high ground. A narrow, shallow river lay not too far back from Highburn's army. Success in battle, Cassian had told me that morning over a swift breakfast, was often decided not by numbers, but by picking where to fight. The Highburn army seemed to realize their disadvantage within moments. But the Illyrians had landed beside Kyr's soldiers. Cassian, Azrael, and Rhys spread out amongst the front line, all clad in that black Illyrian armor, all armed as the other winged soldiers were, shield gripped in the left hand, Illyrian blade in the right, an assortment of daggers on them, and helmets. The helmets were the only markers of who they were. Unlike the smooth domes of the others, Rhys, Azrael, and Cassian wore black helmets whose cheek guards had been fashioned and swept upward like raven's wings. Albeit razor-sharp raven's wings that jutted up on either side of the helmet right above the ear, but the effect, I admitted, was terrifying, especially with the two other swords strapped across their backs, the gauntlets that covered every inch of their hands, and the siphons
gleaming amongst Cassian and Azrael's ebony armor. Rhys's own power roiled around him, readying to hammer the right flank while Cassian aimed for the left. Rhys was to conserve his power, in case the king arrived. Or worse, the cauldron. This army, however huge, it did not seem that the king was even there to lead it. Or Tamlin, or Jurian. Merely an invading harbinger of the force to come, but sizable enough that the damage... We could easily spy the damage behind the army, the plumes of smoke staining the cloudless summer sky. Mor and I said little in the hours that followed. I didn't have it in me for words, for any sort of coherent speech as we watched. Either through our surprise or pure luck, there was no sign of that Feybane. I was inclined to thank the mother for that. Even if every soldier in our camp this morning had mixed Nuan's antidote into their gruel, it would do nothing against blocking weapons tipped in Feybane from shattering shields, only stop against the stifling of magic, should it come into contact either through that damned powder or by being impaled by a weapon tipped in it. Lucky. So lucky it was not in use today. Because seeing the carnage, the fine line of control, there was no place for me on those front lines, where the Illyrians fought by the strength of their sword, their power, and their trust in the mail on either side of them. Even Kyr's soldiers fought as one, obedient and unfaltering, lashing out with shadows and steel. I would have been a fissure in that impenetrable armor. And what Cassian and the Illyrians unleashed upon Highburn. Cassian slammed into that left flank. Siphons unleashed, bursts of power that sometimes bounced off shields, sometimes found their mark, and shredded flesh and bone. But where Highburn's magic shields held out, Rhys, Azrael, and Cassian sent out blasts of their own power to shatter them, leaving them vulnerable to those siphons, or pure Illyrian steel. And if that did not fell them, Kyr and his Darkbringers cleaned up the rest. Precisely. Coolly. The field became a blood-drenched mud pit. Bodies gleamed in the morning sun, light bouncing off their armor. Hybern panicked at the unbreakable Illyrian lines that pushed and pushed them back, that battered them. And as that left flank broke apart, as its nobles fell or turned and fled, the other Highburn soldiers began descending into panic, too. There was one mounted commander who did not go easily, who didn't turn his horse toward that river behind them to flee. Cassian selected him as his opponent. Mor gripped my hand tight enough to hurt as Cassian stepped out of that impenetrable front line of shields and swords, the soldiers around him immediately closing the gap. Mud and blood splattered Cassian's dark helmet, his armor. He ditched his tall shield for a round one, strapped across his back, crafted from the same ebony metal, and then he launched into a run. I could have sworn even Rhys paused on the other end of the battlefield to watch as Cassian cut his way through those enemy soldiers aiming for the mounted Highburn commander, who realized what and who was coming for him, and started to search for a better weapon. Cassian had been born for this. These fields, this chaos and brutality and calculation. He didn't stop moving. Seemed to know where every opponent fought both ahead and behind. Seemed to breathe in the flow of the battle around him. He even let his siphon's shield drop, to get close, to feel the impact of the arrows that he took in that ebony shield. If he slammed that shield into a soldier, his other arm was already swinging his sword at the next opponent. I'd never seen anything like it. The skill and precision. It was like a dance. I must have said it aloud because Mor replied, "For him, that's what battle is. A symphony." Her eyes did not stray from Cassian's death dance. Three soldiers were brave or stupid enough to try to charge him. Cassian had them down and dying with four maneuvers. "Holy Mother," I breathed.
That was who had been training me. Why Fae trembled at his name. Why the high-born Illyrian warriors had been jealous enough to want him dead. But there Cassian was. No one between him and the commander. The commander had found a discarded spear. He threw it. Fast and sure. I skipped a heartbeat as it spiraled for Cassian. His knees bent, wings tucked in tight, shield twisting. He took the spear in the shield with an impact I could have sworn I heard, then sliced off the shaft and kept running. Within a heartbeat, Cassian had sheathed both shield and sword across his back, and I would have asked why, but he'd already picked up another fallen spear. Already hurled it, his entire body going into the throw, the movement so perfect that I knew I'd one day paint it. Both armies seemed to stop at the throw. Even with the distance, Cassian's spear hit home. It went right through the commander's chest, so hard it knocked the male clean off his horse. By the time he was done falling, Cassian was there. His sword caught the sunlight as it lifted and plunged down. Cassian had picked his mark well. Highburn fled now. Outright turned and fled for the river. But Highburn found Tarquin's army waiting on its opposite bank, exactly where Cassian had ordered it to appear. Trapped, with the Illyrians and Kyr's Darkbringers at their backs, and Tarquin's 2,000 soldiers on the other side of the narrow river. It was harder to watch, that slaughter. Moore said to me, "It's over." The sun was high in the sky, heat rising with every minute. "You don't need to see this," she added, because some of Highburn's soldiers were surrendering, on their knees. As it was Tarquin's territory, Rhys yielded the decision about what to do with prisoners. From the distance, I picked out Tarquin from his armor. More ornate than Rhysand's, but still brutal. Fish fins and scales seemed to be the motif, and his azure cloak flowed through the mud behind him as he stepped over fallen bodies to get to the few hundred surviving enemy. Tarquin stared at where the enemy had knelt, his helmet masking his features. Nearby, Rhys, Cassian, and Azriel monitored, speaking to Kyr and the Illyrian captains. I didn't see many wings amongst the fallen on the field. A mercy. The only mercy, it seemed, as Tarquin made a motion with his hand. Some of the Highburn soldiers began screaming for clemency, their offers to sell information ringing out, even to us. Tarquin pointed at a few of them, and they were hauled away by his soldiers, to be questioned, and I doubted it would be pleasant, but the others... Tarquin stretched out his hand toward them. It took me a heartbeat to realize why the Highburn soldiers were thrashing and clawing at themselves, some trying to crawl away. But then one of them collapsed, and sunlight caught on his face, and even with the distance I could tell. Could tell it was water now bubbling out of his lips. Out of the lips of all the Highburn soldiers, as Tarquin drowned them on dry land. I didn't see Rhys or the others for hours. Not when he gave the order that the Illyrian war camp was to be moved from the border of the Winter Court and rebuilt at the edge of the battlefield. So Moore and I winnowed to and from the camps as the exodus began. We brought my sisters last, waiting until many of the bodies had been turned to black dust by Rhysand. The blood and mud remained, but the camp maintained too good a position to yield, or waste time finding another one. Elaine didn't seem to care. Didn't seem to even notice that we winnowed her. She just went from her tent to Moore's arms, then into the same tent, rebuilt in the new camp. Nesta, however. I told her upon arriving that everyone was fine, but when we winnowed to the battlefield, she stared at that bloody, muddy plain, at the weapons soldiers of both courts were plundering from the fallen enemy. Nesta listened to the low-level Illyrian soldiers whispering about how Cassian had thrown that spear, how he'd cut down soldiers like stalks of wheat, how he'd fought like Analius, their most ancient warrior god and the first of the Illyrians. It had been a while, it seemed, since they had seen Cassian in open battle, since they'd realized that he'd been young in the war, and now? The looks they gave Cassian as he passed. They were the same as those the High Lords had given Rhys upon seeing his power. Like them, and yet, other. Nesta watched, and listened to it all, while the camp was built around us. She didn't ask where the bodies had gone before her arrival. She wholly ignored the camp Kyr and his Darkbringers built beside ours, the ebony-armored soldiers who sneered at her, at me, at the Illyrians. No. Nesta only made sure that Elaine was dozing in her tent, and then offered to help cut up linen for bandages. We were doing just that, around the early evening fire, when Rhys and Cassian approached, still in their armor, Azriel nowhere to be found. Rhys took a seat on the log I was perched atop of, armor thudding, and silently pressed a kiss to my temple. He reeked of metal and blood and sweat. His helmet clunked on the ground at our feet. I silently handed him a pitcher of water, and made to grab a glass when Rhys just lifted the pewter container and drank right from it. It sloshed over the sides, water pinging against the black metal coating his thighs, and when he at last set it down, he looked tired. In his eyes, Rhys seemed weary. But Nesta had jolted to her feet, staring at Cassian, at the helmet he had tucked into the crook of his arm, the weapons still poking above his shoulder, in need of cleaning. His dark hair hung limp with sweat. His face was mud-splattered where even the helmet had not kept it out. But she surveyed his seven siphons, the dim red stones, and then said, "You're hurt." Rhys snapped to attention at that. Cassian's face was grim, his eyes glassy. "It's fine." Even the words were laced with exhaustion, but she reached for his arm, his shield arm. Cassian seemed to hesitate, but offered it to her, tapping the siphon atop his palm. The armor slid back a fraction over his forearm, revealing, "You know better than to walk around with an injury," Rhys said a bit tensely. "I was busy," Cassian said, not taking his focus off Nesta as she studied the swollen wrist. How she detected it through the armor. She must have read it in his eyes, his stance. I hadn't realized she'd been observing the Illyrian general enough to notice his tells.
"And it'll be fixed by morning," Cassian said, daring Rhys to say otherwise.
But Nesta's pale fingers gently probed his golden brown skin, and he hissed through his teeth. "How do I fix it?" she asked. Her hair had been tied in a loose knot atop her head earlier in the day, and in the hours that we'd worked to ready and distribute supplies to the healers, through the heat and humidity, stray tendrils had come free to curl about her temple, her nape. Faint color had stained her cheeks from the sun, and her forearms, bare beneath the sleeves she'd rolled up, were flecked with mud. Cassian slowly sat on the log where she'd been perched a moment before, groaning softly, as if even that movement taxed him.
"Icing it usually helps, but wrapping it will just lock it in place long enough for the sprain to repair itself."
She reached for the basket of bandages she'd been preparing, then for the pitcher at her feet. I was too tired to do anything other than watch, as she washed his wrist, his hand, her own fingers gentle. Too tired to ask if she possessed the magic to heal it herself. Cassian seemed too weary to speak as well, while she wrapped bandages around his wrist, only grunting to confirm if it was too tight or too loose, if it helped at all. But he watched her, didn't take his eyes off her face, the brows bunched and lips pursed in concentration. And when she'd tied it neatly, his wrist wrapped in white, when Nesta made to pull back, Cassian gripped her fingers in his good hand. She lifted her gaze to his.
"Thank you," he said hoarsely.
Nesta did not yank her hand away, did not open her mouth for some barbed retort. She only stared and stared at him, at the breadth of his shoulders, even more powerful in that beautiful black armor, at the strong column of his tan neck above it, his wings, and then at his hazel eyes, still riveted to her face. Cassian brushed a thumb down the back of her hand. Nesta opened her mouth at last, and I braced myself.
"You're hurt?"
At the sound of Moore's voice, Cassian snatched his hand back and pivoted toward Moore with a lazy smile.
"Nothing for you to cry over. Don't worry."
Nesta dragged her stare from his face, down to her now empty hand, her fingers still curled, as if his palm lay there. Cassian didn't look at Nesta as she rose, snatching up the pitcher and muttering something about getting more water from inside the tent. Cassian and Moore fell into their banter, laughing and taunting each other about the battle and the ones ahead. Nesta didn't come back out again for some time. I helped with the wounded long into the night, Moore and Nesta working alongside me. A long day for all of us, yes, but the others. They had fought for hours. From the tight angle of Moore's jaw as she tended to injured Darkbringers and Illyrians alike, I knew the various recountings of the battle wore on her. Not for the tales of glory and gore, but for the sole fact that she hadn't been there to fight beside them. But between the Darkbringer forces and the Illyrians, I wondered where she'd fight, whom she'd command or answer to. Definitely not Kier, but I was still chewing it over when I at last slipped between the warm sheets of my bed and curled my body into Reese's. His arm instantly slid over my waist, tugging me in closer.
"You smell like blood,"
he murmured into the dimness. "Sorry," I said. I'd washed my hands and forearms before sliding into bed, but a full bath. I'd barely managed to walk through the camp moments ago. He stroked a hand over my waist, down to my hip.
"You must be exhausted."
"And you should be sleeping," I chided, shifting closer, letting his warmth and scent wrap around me.
"Can't,"
he admitted, his lips brushing over my temple.
"Why?"
His hand drifted to my back, and I arched into the long, trailing strokes along my spine.
"It takes a while to settle myself after a battle."
It had been hours and hours since the fighting had ceased. Reese's lips began a journey from my temple down my jaw. And even with the weight of exhaustion pressing on me, as his mouth grazed over my chin, as he nipped at my bottom lip, I knew what he was asking. Reese sucked in a breath as I traced the contours of his muscled stomach, as I marveled at the softness of his skin, the strength of the body beneath it. He pressed a feather-like kiss to my lips.
"If you're too tired,"
he began, even as he went wholly still while my fingers continued their journey past the sculpted muscles of his abdomen. I answered him with a kiss of my own, another, until his tongue slid over the seam of my lips and I opened for him. Our joining was fast and hard, and I was clawing at his back before the end shattered through both of us, dragging my hands over his wings. For long minutes afterward, we remained there, my legs thrown over his shoulders, the rise and fall of his chest pushing into mine in a lingering echo of our body's movements. Then he withdrew, gently lowering my legs from his shoulders. He kissed the inside of each of my knees as he did so, setting them on either side of him as he rose up to kneel before me. The tattoos on his knees were nearly obscured by the rumpled sheets, The design stretched with the position. But I traced my fingers over the tops of those mountains, the three stars inked atop them, as he remained kneeling between my legs, gazing down at me. I thought about you every moment I was on that battlefield, he said softly. It focused me, centered me. Let me get through it. I stroked those tattoos on his knees again. I'm glad. I think some part of me was down there on that battlefield with you, too. I glanced to his suit of armor, cleaned and displayed on a dummy near the small dressing area. His winged helmet shone like a dark star in the dimness. Seeing that battle today? It felt different from the one in Adriata. Rhys only listened, those star-flecked eyes patient. In Adriata, I struggled for the words. The chaos of the battle in Adriata was easier, somehow. Not easy, I mean... I know what you meant. I sighed, sitting up so that we were knee to knee and face to face. What I'm trying and failing miserably to explain is... that attacks like the one in Adriata, in Valaris. I can fight in those. There are people to defend, and the disorder of it, I'll gladly fight in those battles, but what I saw today, that sort of warfare. I swallowed. Will you be ashamed of me if I admit that I'm not sure if I'm ready for that sort of battling? Line against line, swinging and stabbing until I didn't know up from down, until mud and gore blurred the line between enemy and foe, relying as much upon the warriors beside me as my own skill set. And the closeness of it. The sounds and sheer scale of the bloodbath. He took my face in his hands, kissing me once. Never. I can never be ashamed of you. Certainly not over this. He kept his mouth close to mine, sharing breath. Today's battle was different from Adriata and Valaris. If we had more time to train you with a unit, you could easily fight amongst the lines and hold your own. But only if you wanted to. And for now, these initial battles. Being down in that slaughterhouse is not something I'd wish upon you. He kissed me again. We are a pair, he said against my lips. If you ever wish to fight by my side, it will be my honor. I pulled my head back, frowning at him. I feel like a coward now. He stroked a thumb over my cheek. No one would ever think that of you. Not with all you've done, Feyre. A pause. War is ugly and messy and unforgiving. The soldiers doing the fighting are only a fraction of it. Don't underestimate how far it goes for them to see you here. To see you tending the wounded and participating in these meetings and councils. I considered, letting my fingers drift across the Illyrian tattoos over his chest and shoulders. And perhaps it was the afterglow of our joining. Perhaps it was the battle today. But I believed him. Tarquin's army didn't blend into ours as Kyr's did, but rather camped beside it. Asriel led team after team of scouts to find the rest of Hybern's host, discover their next movement. But nothing. I wondered if Tamlin was with them. If he'd whispered to Hybern everything that had been discussed in that meeting. The weaknesses between courts. I didn't dare ask anyone. But I did dare to question Nesta about whether she felt the cauldron's power stirring. Mercifully, she reported feeling nothing amiss. Even so... I knew Rhys was frequently checking with Amarin and Valaris, asking if she had made any discoveries with the book, and even if she found some alternative way to stop that cauldron. We needed to know where the king was hiding the rest of his army first. And not so we could face it, not alone. No, so we could bring others to finish the job. But only once we knew where the rest of Hybern's army was, where I was to unleash Bryaxis, It would do no good to have Highburn learn of Bryaxis's existence and adjust its plans. No. Only when that full army was upon us, only then would I set it upon them. The first 3 days after the battle, the armies healed their wounded and rested. By the fourth, Cassian ordered them to do menial tasks to stave off any restlessness and chances for dangerous grumbling. His first order? Dig a trench around the entire camp. By the fifth day, the trench halfway finished, Azriel appeared, panting, in the middle of our war tent. Highburn had somehow skirted us entirely, and sent a force marching up the seam between the autumn and summer courts, heading for the winter court border. We couldn't glean a reason why. Azriel hadn't discovered one either. There were half a day's flight from us. He'd already sent warnings to Callias and Vivian. Rhys, Tarquin, and the others debated for hours, weighing the possibilities. Abandon this spot by the border, and we could be playing into Highburn's plans. But leave that northward army unattended, and it could keep going north as far as it pleased. We couldn't afford to split our own army in two. There weren't enough soldiers to spare. Until Varian came up with an idea. He dismissed all the captains and generals. Kier and Devlin, looking none too pleased at the order as they stormed out, dismissed everyone but his sister, Tarquin, and my own family. We march north. And we stay. Rhys lifted a brow. Cassian frowned. But Varian jabbed a finger on the map spread on the table we'd gathered around. Spin a glamour, a good one, so that if anyone walks by here, they see and hear and smell an army. Put whatever spells in place to repel them from actually coming up to it, but let Highburn's eyes report that we are still here, that we choose to stay here. While we march north under a sight shield, Cassian murmured, rubbing his jaw. It could work, he added with a grin to Varian. You ever get sick of all that sunshine? You can come play with us in Valaris. Though Varian frowned, something glinted in his eye. But Tarquin said to Rhys, You could make such a deception? Rhys nodded and winked at me. With assistance from my mate. I prayed that I'd rested enough, as they all looked to me. I was nearly drained by the time Rhys and I were finished that night. I followed his instructions, marking faces and details, willing that shape-shifting magic to craft them out of thin air, to give them life of their own. It was like applying a thin film over all those living in the camp that would then separate when we moved out, separate and grow into its own entity that walked and talked and did all manner of things here, while we marched in to intercept Highburn's army hidden from sight by Rhys. But it worked. Cressida, skilled with glamours herself, worked personally on the Summer Court soldiers. She and I were both panting and sweaty hours later, and I nodded my thanks as she handed me a skein of water. She wasn't a trained warrior like her brother, but she was a solid, needed presence amongst the army. The soldiers looked to her for guidance and stability. We moved out again, a far larger beast than the one that had flown down here. The Summer Court soldiers and Kier's legion couldn't fly, but Tarquin dug deep into his reservoirs and winnowed them along with us. He'd be wholly empty by the time we reached the enemy, but he insisted he was better at fighting with steel anyway. We found the Highburn army at the northern edge of the mighty forest that stretched along the Summer Court's eastern border. Azriel had scouted the land ahead for Cassian, laid it out in precise detail. It was late enough in the afternoon that Highburn was readying to settle down for the night. Cassian had let our army rest all day, anticipating that, knowing that the end of a long day of marching, Highburn's forces would be exhausted, muddled. Another rule of war, he told me, knowing when to pick your battles could be equally as important as where you fought them. With rain-heavy clouds sweeping in from the east, and the sun sinking toward the trees behind us, sycamores and oaks that towered high,
We landed. Rhys ripped off the glamour surrounding us. He wanted word to get out, wanted word to spread amongst Hybern's forces who was meeting them at every turn, slaughtering them. But they already knew. Again, I watched from the camp itself, atop a broad rim leading into the grassy little valley where Hybern had planned to rest. Elaine ducked into her tent the moment the Illyrian warriors built it for her. Only Nesta strode toward the edge of the tents to watch the battle on the valley floor below. Moor joined her, then me. Nesta didn't flinch at the clash and din of battle. She only stared toward one blacked armored figure, leading the lines, his occasional order to push or to hold that flank, barking across the battle. Because this battle, Hybern had been ready, and the appearance they'd given, of a tired army ready to rest for the night, it had been a ruse, as our own had been. Kyr's soldiers started going down first, shadows sputtering out, their front lines buckling. Moor watched it, stone-faced. I had no doubt she was half-hoping her father joined the dead now piling up. Even as Kyr managed to rally the Darkbringers, reassembled that front line, only after Cassian had roared at him to fix it. And on the other side of the field, Rhys and Tarquin were drained enough that they were actually battling sword to sword against soldiers. And again, no sign of the king, or Jurian, or Tamlin. Moor was hopping from one foot to another, glancing at me every now and then. The bloodshed, the brutality. It sang to some part of her. Being up here with me, it was not where she wished to be. But this running after armies, scrambling to stay ahead, it would not provide a solution, not for long. The skies opened up, and the battle turned into outright muddy slaughter. Siphons flared. Soldiers died. Hybern wielded its own magic upon our forces, arrows tipped in Feybane finally making an appearance, along with clouds of it, that mercifully didn't last long in the rain. And did not impact us, not one bit, with Nuon's antidote in our systems. Only those arrows which were skillfully avoided with shields or outright destruction to their shafts, leaving the stone to fall harmlessly from the sky. Still, Cassian, Asriel, and Rhys kept fighting, kept killing. Tarquin and Varian held their own, spreading out their soldiers to aid Kyrs' once again foundering line. Too late. From the distance, through the rain, we could see perfectly as the dark line of Kyr's soldiers caved to an onslaught of Hybern's cavalry. Shit, Moor breathed, gripping my arm tight enough to bruise, warm summer rain soaking our clothes, our hair. Shit! Like a burst dam, Hybern's soldiers poured through, cleaving Kyr's forces in half. Cassian's bellowing was audible even from the hilltop. Then he was soaring, dodging arrows and spears, his siphons so dim they barely guarded him against it. I could have sworn Rhys roared some order to him, that Cassian disregarded as he landed in the middle of those enemy forces sundering our lines, and unleashed himself. Nesta inhaled in a sharp, high gasp. More and more, Hybern spread us farther and farther apart. Rhys's power slammed into the flank of them, trying to shove them back, but his power was drained, exhausted from last night. Dozens fell to those snapping shadows, rather than hundreds. Reform the lines, Moor was muttering, releasing me to pace, rain sluicing down her face. Reform the damn lines! Cassian was trying. Asriel had lunged into the fray, nothing more than shadows edged in blue light, battling his way toward where Cassian fought, utterly surrounded. Mother above, Nesta said softly. Not in awe, no. No, that was dread in her voice. And within my own, as I said, they can fix this. Or I prayed they could.
Even if this battle... This was not all that Hybern had to offer against us. This was not all they had to offer, and yet we were being pushed back, back, back. Red flared in the heart of that battle like an exploding ember. A circle of soldiers died. But more Hybern soldiers pushed in around Cassian. Even Asriel couldn't get to his side. My stomach turned. Over and over. Hybern had hidden the majority of its force somewhere. Our scouts could not find it. Asriel couldn't find it. And Elaine, she couldn't see that mighty army, she'd said, in her dreams awake and asleep. I knew little of war, of battle. But this? It felt like patching up holes in a boat while it sank. As the rain drenched us, as Mor paced and swore at the slaughter, the bodies starting to pile up on our side, the foundering lines, I realized what I had to do. If I could not be down there fighting, who I had to hunt down, and ask about the location of Hybern's true army. The Suriel. Chapter 57.
Absolutely not, Mor said when I pulled her a few feet away from Nesta, the din of the battle and rain drowning out our voices. Absolutely not.
I jerked my head toward the valley below.
Go join them. You're wasted here. They need you.
It was true.
Cassian and Az need you to push back the front lines.
For Cassian's siphons were beginning to sputter.
Rhys will kill me if I leave you here.
Rhys will do no such thing, and you know it. He's got wards around this camp, and I'm not entirely defenseless, you know.
I wasn't lying, exactly, but the Suriel might very well not appear if Mor was there. And if I told her where I was going, I had no doubt she would insist on coming with me.
We didn't have the luxury of waiting for Jurian to give us information about many things. I needed to leave now.
Go fight. Make those Hybern pricks scream a bit.
Nesta drew her attention away from the slaughter enough to add,
help them.
For that was Cassian, making another charge toward a Hybern commander, hoping to spook the soldiers again. Mor frowned deeply, bounced once on her toes.
Just be on your guard, both of you.
I gave her a wry look, right before she rushed for her tent. I waited until she emerged again, buckling on weapons, and saluted me before she winnowed away to the battlefield. Right to Asriel's side, just as a soldier nearly landed a blow to his back. Mor punched her sword through the soldier's throat before he could land that strike. And then, Mor began cutting a path toward Cassian. Toward the broken front line beyond him, her damp golden hair a ray of sunshine amid the mud and dark armor. Soldiers began screaming. Screamed some Mor when Asriel, blue siphons flaring, fell into place beside her. Together, they plowed a path to Cassian. Or tried to. They made it perhaps 10 feet before they were swarmed again. Before the press of bodies made even Moore's hair vanish in mud and rain. Nesta laid a hand against her bare, rain-slick throat. Cassian began another assault on a Hybern captain, slower this time than he'd been.
Now. I had to go now. Quickly.
I took a step away from the outlook. My sister narrowed her brows at me.
You're leaving?
I'll be back soon, was all I said. I didn't dare wonder how much of our army would be left when I did. By the time I strode away, Nesta had already faced the battle once Mor, rain plastering her hair to her head, resuming her unending vigil of the general battling on the valley floor below. I had to track the Suriel. And even though Elaine could not see the Hybern host, it was worth a try. Her tent was dim and quiet, the sounds of slaughter far away. Dreamlike. She was awake, staring blankly at the canvas ceiling. I need you to find something for me, I said, dripping water everywhere as I laid a map across her thighs. Perhaps not as gentle as I should have been, but she at least sat up at my tone.